Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. Jumping straight from the Royal Academy of Music into a stunning performance career, playing stadiums and arenas with stars such as Rihanna, Jessie J, Jason Derulo, and Tyra Cruz, Hannah V soon found her true love in production and songwriting, working with major label artists such as Yola, Stormzy, J.P. Cooper, Lala Hathaway, and Toby. In 2018, she scored her first gold certified album from producing and co-writing on J.P. Cooper's Raised Under Grey Skies, and in 2021 was part of the writing team for Yola's Grammy-nominated album Stand For Myself. A familiar face at recording studios across Germany, America, and in the UK, also including the iconic Abbey Road. In 2022, her version of Rihanna's Diamonds featured in the highly acclaimed second season of Bridgerton. She has been nominated twice for a Music Producer Guild Award. As a member of the Ivors Academy Songwriting Committee, Hannah regularly judges categories in the annual awards. Beyond her musical accomplishments, Hannah V remains committed to using her platform for social change. She passionately advocates for inclusivity, diversity, and the empowerment of marginalized voices within the music industry. Hannah's work to support female artists within the industry has ranged in the last year from working on female-only albums to selecting, mentoring, and producing three new female artists at Abbey Road under the DHL Fast Track campaign, and participating in various female-only writing camps with labels such as Motown. This year has also seen Hannah travel to Cape Town regularly to collaborate with and support disadvantaged emerging artists in their creative journeys. Up next, live in studio, we have got Hannah V. So, Hannah V, live in studio with me on Celeb Savant today.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi. So nice to meet you, and I'm so grateful to have you on this show today. So tell us, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here. It's my last few hours in Jozi, my first time in Jozi. After this, I'm going to head to the airport, back to Cape Town, a couple more weeks, then back to London. So yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
So now let's rewind.
Yes.
All the way to the very beginning.
The very beginning.
So what age did you realize, cool, I want to be in the entertainment industry? Mm. And how did that journey roll out and accumulate to where we are today?
I don't think it was a conscious decision with me. I took piano lessons when I was a kid. I went quite the classical route, as in, you know, had classical piano lessons. Mm. I entered competitions. I was quite good at it. School I went to school in Berlin, but I went to an international school, an American school. So we had an amazing music program there. So the teachers realized that I was quite musical. So I started playing in bands and orchestras, accompanying singers. And so I was surrounded by music. Mm. I was also playing in church. My family was very supportive. And so I found myself kind of just being nurtured. You know, I call it the three-pronged attack from school, church, and parents.
Yes.
And so it wasn't a decision. It was just something that naturally, there was not going to be any other way.
Okay.
You know, because I did, like, even when I was a teenager, I did like band camps in the States,
yes,
jazz camps in the States. Mm. So it was always clear I wanted to be a jazz pianist. It was always clear that that was going to be my route, you know.
Why jazz?
When I was 14, one of my teachers, Dr. Hinton, amazing person, gave me two tapes. And they had a Miles Davis record, a Coltrane record, a McCoy Tyner record, and a Roy Hargrove record. Mm. Jesus said, Hannah, I think you'd like this. I listened to these records, absolutely fell in love, and wanted to immediately learn how to play jazz. And, you know, like, once the bug gets you, that's it.
Cool. So you decided to become a jazz pianist, and then how did that progress?
So then I decided I wanted to study music, you know, and I was living in Berlin at this point. So I auditioned for the Royal Academy of Music in London, got accepted there, and moved to London to train at the conservatory.
And next steps?
Then realized at the academy after I graduated, realized that you don't make a lot of money with jazz unless you're like elite top, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, but I knew I wanted to stay in London. I never wanted to move back to Berlin. I love the, you know, cosmopolitan vibe of London.
Yes.
I just liked London. So initially, you know, I spent years of just like playing in hotel bars, doing piano lessons, mm-hmm. kind of doing whatever I needed to do to make ends meet. You know, I was a PA, I worked in bars, whatever I needed to do. But one day I got a phone call from one of my friends from college, actually, from the Royal Academy, saying, Hannah, a pop artist needs a keyboard player. Do you want to play? And I had never really done session work before, but
yes.
I'm always a type of person that just says yes to opportunities. I just say, let's go yes. for it, you know? I said yes, and that's where my session career started. It turned out that it came naturally to me, programming keyboards, playing those type of songs. It's a very, like, efficient way of working pop compared to jazz. You know, in jazz, we go to rehearsals. If we rehearse, we rehearse 22 songs and we do the gig the next day. Mm-hmm. In pop, you do one song a day because every lick is thought about, every sound is thought about, the arrangements. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's all like ties into choreography and screens and fire and just, you know, like it's a big productions. And for me, it felt very natural. I had like a natural inclination
yes.
to that type of meticulous work. So I ended up kind of, you know, after my first couple of pop gigs, I ended up climbing up the ladder quite soon. So, you know, before I knew it, you know, I was playing for Anastasia, for the Sugar Babes, for Girls Aloud. The big call came one day on a Tuesday. I got a call to be in Rihanna's band on a Friday. I flew to LA and kind of didn't come back for a year, you know. I was Jesse J's keyboard player for 3 years. I played for Tyra Cruz, Jay Sean. I mean, lots and lots of different artists. So I was very fortunate to tour the world, play some of the biggest stages in the world. I've done Wembley Stadium a bunch of times, you know, Madison Square Garden, Staples Center. It was incredible.
For the listeners who do not know, what is session work?
Session work is when you are in the band of a big artist.
Okay.
So I was playing keyboards
yes.
for Rihanna or for Jesse J or for Tyra Cruz or for, you know.
You mentioned a bunch of artists.
Mm-hmm.
And not pointing fingers at any of the names or anything. But was it by doing the session work for those different artists, was it the same in the sense of what you had to do for each artist and the routine and the different ways it worked? Or for each artist was a different routine, different thing to do?
Yeah, I think every artist had a different approach because, you know, every artist has a different musical director.
Yes.
Every artist's approach is a different. American artist's approach shows different to UK artists. In the UK, people like to keep it quite close to the record, you know?
Okay, yes.
Whereas in the States, you know, you really switch it up with arrangements. And so, like, each artist kind of brought something really unique to the table that I learned from, you know? And again, artists are different, you know? Like, someone like Rihanna, there's a lot of partying going on, you know, because that's part of a character. That's also part of a job, you know, club appearances after the show. It was a very lit gig. Other artists, for example, Jessie J, you know, she's much more kind of, that's not her scene.
Yes.
You know, so that we wouldn't do all of that, you know. And so you kind of adapt to the artists you go out with as well.
After all these world tours and session work, what was next?
It's a kind of a crazy thing to say because at the end of my session career, something in my stomach kept telling me, Hannah, I think it's time for a change. But then I'm thinking, Hannah, you're living the dream. You're traveling the world. You're playing the biggest stages on the planet. You're playing with some of the biggest artists on the planet. Why would you want to change that? But I found that after a while, like, touring is exhausting, you know, and you're gone. The tours I was doing, they're big tours. So you're gone for 8 months at a time. You come home for a couple of weeks and then you're back on the road again, you know, so I felt like the only way I can describe it is like I felt like a ghost because you're not there for your family. You're not there for your friends. You're not around because you're just always, you're living in this, we call it the tour bubble. You know, we're living in this tour bubble. And also I was thinking, you know, I come from a jazz piano background, from a real muso background. So as amazing as these big stages were, I never dreamt of them. You know, like it was never like on my wish list. I want to play Wembley Stadium. It's amazing that I did it. But I was always about the art. And I just knew that it was time for a change. But I didn't know how this change was going to come. I did not know how it was going to happen because I was so cemented now as one of the leading session keyboard players in the UK, in the world, really, you know? So how do you even move from that when you're at the top of your game? How do you switch it up? Well, by God's grace, for me anyways, I got very unexpectedly, I got signed to Sony Records as a producer, and I got a producer-artist deal. It was a small deal, an EP and a couple of singles, but enough of a deal for me to say, I'm quitting being a session musician.
Okay.
And so that's where my production, my journey as a producer started.
Had you had done production before?
I had, okay. But to be fair, I'd only tinkered. But always on the tour buses, when I was around producers, you know, I always had my laptop, I always had, you know, Logic, I was always learning from people around me. And again, as a keyboard player, you get parts sent to you from the producers, you know, so
yeah.
Imagine I'm with Rihanna and I'm getting stems from Kanye West, I'm getting stems from Hit Boy, you know, so I'm around
yes.
the individual parts, you know, and I think that's where also like my interest was awoken, because I was thinking, man, this is like, I think I can be on the other side as well. So yeah, I was dabbling, but when I got signed, I definitely needed, like, for the first year, one of my close friends who was a producer kind of helped me, taught me the ropes in yes. terms of professional production, you know, because even in terms of deliverables, I didn't know what deliverables were to a label. I didn't know how a campaign worked. I didn't know any of these things, you know. I just got signed and all of a sudden it's like, okay, Hannah, what are you going to produce? And I was like, whoa, I don't know. So it took me about a year or so to find my feet.
Yes.
Slowly figure out what my sound actually was. Because again, as a session musician, you listen to your musical director. I don't think of myself or my individuality, because that's not what the job is. Hannah V, the Hannah Vasanth, the session musician, it took a second for me to become Hannah V, the artist, the producer.
Yes.
The person with my own musical identity.
Now, during that year of transitioning and understanding and getting stuck into it, were there any periods of time where it's like, oh, I can't do this, I don't know what I'm doing?
Oh. All the time. All the time. And okay. I think also it's like I had real FOMO for the first 6 months, because you have to understand, I lived out of my suitcases. I was on tour hard for like 8 years or something like that. And so for me, even though it was a decision I made, for me to pack away my suitcases, it was emotional for me. And then I see like all my friends traveling, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, you're staying in my favorite hotel in Singapore. Oh my gosh, you're going to, you know, like I could see like, all of these cool things happening, and I was jealous, even though I had made this decision, you know, because I still didn't know what I was doing as my artist journey. Like, it was new to me. But about 6 months into my new path, I was kind of thinking, whoa, wait, so you're telling me my job is to go into the studio and whatever's in my head, just put it into the computer. This is amazing, you know, but it definitely took me a second to adjust. And also, as a producer, when I came into the game as a producer, I had to start from scratch, because in studio world, nobody cared that I'd played for Rihanna, that I played for Jessie. Yes. So all my stripes didn't matter. So it was humbling too, you know, going from being at the top of a game to being at the bottom and having to work myself up again.
When you were confronted with that, of being, who cares you played with
Rihanna? Yeah.
What were your thoughts? How did you pick yourself up to say, okay, cool. Now I realize this. I have to start, not necessarily for again, but sort of at a lower level. What was the motivation? Like, okay, just keep going. Just keep swimming.
You know what? I wasn't even mad about that. I totally understood. And I knew that for me to become as good of a producer as I'm a pianist, it's going to take time.
Okay.
I spend my whole life practicing the piano. Yes. To, you know, so for me, that was just part of the process. It didn't get me down. I didn't expect to immediately be at the top of my game. I was surprised initially, because it had been a while since I'd been a beginner in something, you know? So those were new emotions. But then I was just like, well, just keep my head down and become good. Okay. I have to become good, you know? The only way through it is through it, right?
Lovely segue. So what is good in production? Let's dissect that.
Interesting. So I think a couple of different aspects. First of all, you have to technically be on top of your game. You have to be fast. You have to have knowledge of the equipment, of the latest plugins, of all the software. Technology keeps changing really on a daily basis. So you have to be on top of it. But that's only one side of being a producer. Another side, the main side for me of being a producer, is how do I get the best out of my artists? Each human being is different. Each artist is different. So I have to suss out within 5 minutes of meeting an artist, are you the shy person? Are you loud? Do you need to, you know, have a drink first? Do you need to go outside and talk first? Are you ready to just get cracking because you're experienced in the studio? How do I get the best out of you? How do I get the real you? That is my job. Nobody teaches you that. People skills, empathy, being able to read a person and being like, okay, you're this kind of person, so I'm going to do this and this and this and that. Because I always like challenging my artists and getting something new out of them. I always ask them, what haven't you explored? What sound haven't you explored? Let's try it. You know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But that's like my space. That's where I thrive. You know, like, let's take risks.
let's dive into, do you work in all genres? Mm-hmm. Or what are your favorite genres? Mm-hmm.
So no, I think I consider myself a specialist producer.
Okay.
I love working, and I think this is because of my background in jazz. I love working with singers, people that can sing, people that technically, emotionally are at the top of their game. I thrive on that because I know how to work a voice like that. I love people with a story. That's really important to me too. You know, do you have something to say for real? You know, I like making meaningful music. Mm. So I work with a lot of singer-songwriters, but I also love working with rappers. I love working in R&B and hip hop and, you know, like in harder sounds as well, you know, it's a broad definition of what pop music is. But you won't necessarily find me like making dance bangers because I only make the type of music I listen to and I'm picky about what I listen to.
How does it work when you, for an artist, do they approach you or do you approach them or is it a combination of both?
There's different, different ways of how artists link up with me. I mean, we all have teams, you know, so maybe it's management, maybe it's through labels, maybe it's through publishers. At this point, you know, I'm close with a lot of the A&R, so they'll just be like, Hannah, we've got a new artist and we're going to send them to you, want to see what you do. But a lot of it is also through socials, you know, like if I hear someone that I like, I'll just hit them up. My friends recommend me artists. So it's very much, there is a big part of it is word of mouth and just like reaching out organically, very organically. Yes.
So you mentioned earlier about the technology and things changing all the time.
Yeah.
I love me a CD. Yeah. I love this. Yeah, like holding the booklet, the pictures, all that kind of stuff. For me, it's an energy exchange to the artist to say, thank you. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for your creativity. Thank you for uplifting me with your music. I'm very grateful, and I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, cassettes, vinyls are making a massive comeback.
Yeah.
We've also got these digital platforms. What are your perceptions of each, and is there a preference for you that you enjoy working with?
No, you know what? I just move with the times. And I'm not even mad about streaming anymore because that's just the world we live in, you know? And I have to adapt, you know? For me to sit there and kind of think about the good old days, it's not going to work, you know? I just need to constantly adapt. This is where we are. Technology is where it's at. Streaming is where it's at. Income from streaming isn't great, so I make very calculated decisions about who I go in with. I'm at the stage in my career where even if somebody's amazing, I can't just go in with you just because you've got an amazing voice. There has to be a team behind you. And I don't like that that is the way it is, but ultimately this is how I pay my rent, right?
Yeah.
So I have to look at the bigger picture, you know, like, you're amazing, that's a given, but then do you have good management? Do you have publishers? Are you maybe signed? If you're not signed, you know, do you have a good team that you work with? Because in this day and age, I think it's something like 80,000 tracks get uploaded every day on Spotify.
Yes, exactly.
So how is my work with the artists gonna cut through the noise?
Exactly.
And just good music alone isn't enough.
Yeah.
You know, we do have to have an infrastructure around us. And so I have to make decisions based on people's surroundings and their teams. It is what it is.
And are you still signed with Sony?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so that deal was about 2-3 years.
Okay.
But it taught me so much. It taught me how to be an artist. It taught me production skills. It taught me about campaigns. And so now I feel very comfortable working with major label artists. I feel very comfortable working with independent artists at the beginning of their journey. I'm kind of comfortable in any room.
So you're not signed to anyone. You're working for yourself.
Yeah, yes. Working for myself. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the technical side. So when you first started, was there someone to teach you that or was it YouTube?
No, you know what? I learned from watching people and I'm so grateful that I had that because you don't know until you see it. You need to see it. And even YouTube tutorials and stuff like that. For me personally, I need to see a producer working with an artist.
Totally, yes.
I need to see it. Yeah, I need to see the process. Then I need to look at the computer. I need to look at the shortcuts, you know?
And then you can ask questions real time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how I learned. And again, I was very fortunate that I had amazing producers around me that I was either touring with or that were my friends where I just asked questions. I'm not afraid of asking questions. I don't care. I don't care if I look dumb or not. You know, like I will ask. Like I'm hungry for knowledge. I've always been that person.
Yeah.
And so, so that's how I learned. I learned by sitting in the back of studios and asking questions.
What's next?
Oof. I don't do the what's next thing.
Oh, okay.
Because my career path, my life has been so unexpected and crazy, and there's so many twists and turns. Even this whole South Africa thing. I came to South Africa in January with my parents to Cape Town on a holiday. Loved the place. Came in March for a month, not knowing anyone to make music. I didn't know anyone. I had no studio. I knew nothing.
Yes.
You know, made amazing songs and came back now for another month, you know, to make more music. And like, I'm loving working here, you know, and I travel a lot in general with music and with production and stuff like switches, you know, like I could get a call tomorrow saying, Hannah, we need you to cut an album with so-and-so in some part of the world. Yes. And then I'll fly over. I just feel very fortunate that this is my reality, you know, like I work with incredible artists. I make amazing music. I get to see the world. I get to meet people from different cultures. I get to learn about different cultures. It's just a dream.
You mentioned about being called to do an album. So do you generally do albums or do you do singles or do you both? And which do you prefer?
I do both. Albums take a long time. Singles I can turn around from beginning of writing the track. I can maybe turn it around in 2 weeks, you know?
Okay.
Albums, we're talking 4 to 5, 6 months. But being part of a body of work is amazing.
Yeah.
There's something about that. And there's also something special about, I just finished an album with an incredible Tunisian artist called Emel Mathloutli. It's coming out next year. Mm. We started in New York. Then we continued in Paris. We worked on it in London. We worked on it online back and forth. And, you know, the project is amazing. And it took us months and months and months and months and months, you know? And we really only just wrapped it. So a year after I joined the project. It's hardcore doing albums. Mm. But I like the overview. I like the whole story. Yes. I like being part of the entire process. So, yeah, I like doing both. But when I do an album, I do not have space to do different artists. And then I miss that, you know, because usually, like right now, I'm working with 3-4 different artists a week. When I'm in album mode, that doesn't happen.
So, but it seems like, though, even though you're not doing the tour bubble anymore, it seems like you're still traveling around and going all over and getting busy. So it was probably not as hectic because I know with tours, on the stage, off the stage, change, bus, plane, whatever, it's a little more calm.
Yeah.
You can take more time to experience the world.
Correct, correct. That was the main thing I missed about touring. It was the traveling. I was thinking, oh man, I love seeing the world. And I'm so glad that in the last 2, 3, 4 years, kind of, I've been able to. I mean, it's stuff I've instigated. You know, I've said, I'm going to go to LA for 5 weeks. I'm going to go back to Berlin and work there. I'm going to, you know, do these pockets of writing in different cities and different countries. And it's working out really well for me because I think I've never been the type of person to be too scared. Just drop me off and I'll figure it out.
Yes.
You know, I'll make it work somehow.
Yeah, you talk to people. You meet people.
Yeah.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 days, 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 years, I understand and I recognize your answer will be different every single time.
Go on.
Because there's thousands of them.
Yeah.
If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those songs be and by whom?
Okay, I'd probably do a Joni Mitchell song because I love Joni. Both Sides Now. I'd have to have a classic jazz track, so maybe something from Miles's Kind of Blue. I love Mac Miller, so I'd have one of his tracks. Not sure which one, but I'd have one of Mac's tracks. Aretha. Gotta have Aretha. Greatest artist to have ever lived. Oof. Who's
going
to... Oof. So we got hip-hop, jazz. We got soul. We got classic singer-songwriter with Joni. Hey, this is hard. The last one is hard. It should be someone modern. Hold on, you got me stumped on this one. Wait, I'll get there.
That's part of this game. Yeah. I love this game.
Yeah. Part of me wants to go back to like more another soul artist and say Donny Hathaway or Stevie. Yeah, I'm going to say a tie between Donny and Stevie.
Lovely. So the podcast is listened throughout the world, all your stops on your journeys. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
It took me a long time to figure out where I fit in my job, in the world, as a person. But that's part of the process. So trust the process, keep going on, and be patient with yourself, be patient with the vocation. It'll all click into place. And when it does, it's a beautiful feeling.